Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Masao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today, our guest is Rebecca Bissell. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Bissell, and I am a producer at Deck 9 Games in Colorado.
What's game development like in Colorado?
Game development is pretty small, I would say. I came originally from New York City, working at Nickelodeon on their games team over there.
Okay.
And I was looking for a new job about 2 years ago. And I was like, I'm excited to go to the West Coast or like Texas. And a friend of mine worked at Deck 9 and was like, you have to come here. You'd love it so much. And I was like, Colorado? What's in Colorado? I've never been to Colorado. And they're like, well, this awesome studio is here. You should come here. And I actually said no to applying like three times until she was like, well, yeah, the posting is up and we need this now. And well, and I was like, fine, okay, whatever. And I applied and I fell in love with the Denver area. I fell in love with the game that we're making, which was announced in March. So Life is Strange True Colors, which is all about empathy and a new entry in the Life is Strange series, which I'm a huge fan of. I cried when I heard what the game was because I was so excited. And I've just learned so much and the team's so great. So I kind of wish I could go to past Rebecca and say, you're dumb. Like, why are you letting this like limit you?
I mean, you got there in the end.
I think a lot of East Coast or West Coast folks like will tend to be like, well, everything's on the East or West Coast or in Texas. Like, what else is there in between?
The flyover state mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is definitely benefits of being in a game development hub. Moving around within the same city is mm-hmm. possible, where that becomes more difficult. But, you know, if you're happy where you are, then who cares? You mm-hmm. know, like that's like, where you need to be.
Having the excuse to move out to Colorado, like when I was in, was amazing. So I'm somebody who loves the mountains. I'm a huge dog person, which it is a requirement if you move to Colorado to get a dog. It is weird if you don't have one in your house. Just trees, like you are surrounded by so much natural beauty and space and the people who are here. It's interesting. One of the things I noticed immediately when I started to kind of like talk to people right before everything shut down, the pandemic, people wouldn't ask like, oh, what do you do? They asked like, oh, what are your interests, to like get to know you. And mm-hmm. it was the first time I had heard that. I think in New York City, it's very much like, oh, what do? That defines who you are. Cool. And then people here are like, yeah, I do whatever, but like, I'm super duper into cross country skiing and I do this. Or like, I went up to Leadville and did the 100 miler, or like all these crazy things. And it's really interesting because I think it's definitely a mindset shift from what I'm used to, which is your job mm-hmm. defines you versus no, you define who you are through your interests and loves and stuff like that.
Speaking of which, this podcast is called What Else Do You Do? So what else do you do?
Well, for the past, let's say, I think 12 years, I have studied and been a professional improviser, improv comedy performer. And my specialty is musical improv.
Musical improv. Okay, well, let's talk about improv in general.
Like, yes.
So what is improv? Just so people who don't know are...
Yeah. Improv is the act of making things up on the spot. It's usually comedy, is what you'll see. So there's two main types of improv. There is the short form improv. So a lot of the games that you'll see on shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where they'll say, okay, the game is scenes from a hat and we'll take suggestions out and the performers will then respond or riff on whatever the topic is or play in the space or the game for about maybe 4 to 5 minutes. And you'll see, have a whole show of just like those 5 minute chunks of games that the team will play together. And the other half is long form improv. Usually the most popular form of that is called a Herald structure, which I'll explain what that is too. You basically will get one suggestion at the top of your hour show, and then the improv team will make up a scene or combination of scenes just off that one suggestion, and it'll run straight. So you'll basically have like a huge improvised play, essentially. And there's different offshoots of like the Herald, which has a very specific structure of like these three scenes and beats that you come back to. There are different teams that do different variations on the Herald, and there's also different types of improv based on different areas of the country or the world. And it's a rabbit hole full of very specific words and a lot of like insider, I guess, knowledge or speak, which it seems a little inaccessible at first, but what the audience sees is just, oh, these are funny people making stuff up and they're making me laugh, hopefully.
Okay. But you were saying that you wanted to talk about musical improv,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which I've never even heard of. Like what, I'm more of a stand-up comedy kind of person. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't do it, but like I like to listen to it. And I also like listen to like podcasts and like interviews. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people come from kind of like improv background. So that's why I'm kind of tangentially aware of what like improv is. But mm-hmm. but musical improv, I've never even heard of. So
it is a niche offshoot, I'd say, of like a long form / short form hybrid. There's also other types like Shakespearean improv, which is its own other field. And then there's like Western improvs and like all this. But musical improv specifically, generally, is a team of people will come up with a full length musical based on the suggestion of an audience member. And improvising songs where you have to worry about song structure, verses, choruses, hooks, rhyming, dancing sometimes with choreography, making a full musical is its own skill set away from improv. It's usually like an elective if you're taking improv classes at like different improv studio, depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. Musical improv is like a special interest. So it's definitely not as like mainstream as those types. But my love of musical improv, I think, comes from just my love of theater. I started out doing theater, I would say, when I was like 10. And if I had to self-diagnose why I was so drawn to theater is from being born to when I was 10 years old, I moved about 9 times across different parts of the country. So I was constantly having to figure out how to make friends or relate to kids. And then my dad was not in the military. He was just an accountant who kept finding better jobs because my mom kept encouraging him to find better jobs. So we moved all over, mostly the southern part of the U.S.
Okay.
And from that, I don't know if it was that or just ma'am, I've always had pretty bad social anxiety. So specifically people, if they see me or if they talk to me, like when I was like in middle school, I would freak out of just like the fear of being perceived, I guess. And one of the ways to combat that, I'm a generally kind of a silly person. And I think people that are anxious or sad, they'll generally tend to try and find ways to like make other people happy too. I know I definitely do that. And theater was just this way for me to, when my mom put me in this after school theater program called Drama Kids, we were living in Virginia. I was like, oh my God, I can be whoever I want to be. I don't have to be just Rebecca. I can be a talking armchair, or I can be an old lady, or I can be like all a bear, or like all these other crazy things that like lets me explore the emotions I'm feeling, but not through my own, hi, I'm Rebecca. It's no, I'm playing this character. Mm-hmm. And it definitely really helped me combat that. And today I am the person who I can talk to a wall. Like I love talking to everybody. I love socializing with people. And I think from there, doing theater was really the place where my mom and my dad were like, I feel like she's more inclined to like making people laugh. Like, let's just put her in like a after school improv program when I was like in middle school. And I found my people there. And I really, the theater that I started doing improv with was Comedy Sports Richmond, in Richmond, Virginia, where I'm from. And the basic fundamental skills you learn as a kid through improv, which I'm sure most people know of, yes and, you know, if you're given something, you say, yes, I accept it, and I'm going to add to this thing. Mm-hmm. Committing. So if somebody go into a scene and somebody says, oh, hello, my good friend, isn't it nice on this boat today? You don't then just go,
I don't know.
I'm not on a boat. Yeah. You're like, I'm in a spaceship, because then it just kills the whole scene. Yeah. And you're like, and then there's the difference between like your friends coming to you and giving you an offer like, hello, friend, we're on a boat. You go, yes, and yeah, we're on a boat. And oh my God, it's so windy. This is really bad improv. Don't listen to this. But like heightening it and saying like, and this is happening and we're building this world together and taking mm-hmm. the person along with you in the journey of building it. So yeah, I started taking classes when I was like in middle school. I found my people. If middle school is a good time for anybody, I don't trust them. So middle school was a bad time for me, except having improv and theater, because it really was the place where I was like, I can explore being silly. I can explore connections. I can build confidence in myself to be in front of a crowd of people and not have anything quote unquote prepared, but I still feel confident enough to speak, to convey myself in a way that makes sense and that I feel good about, and communicating with others to build that too.
Okay. Well, let's talk about like musical improv specifically.
Yeah. Sure.
So like, how does it work? Is the music improvised or the music you already have ahead of time?
So the music is also improvised usually. There are some teams that do canned tracks, and I can talk about kind of how I jumped from improv to specifically musical improv to give context to that too.
Okay.
I started loving musical theater as well. I sing. I've been doing vocal lessons since I was like 15 and then kind of stopped in college. I've been dancing, tap. I did show choir in high school, a lot of just performance stuff. I was a big Glee kid. I was in a lot of musicals growing up, middle school, high school, and college. So that love of musical theater and some of the conventional shorthands that you understand in musical theater, of the structure of a musical, like the classic, for example, a classic Disney musical will have like an I Want song, which is like where the character, the main character says, is just kind of hitting this one note of I want this thing and I don't have it. And, or, you know, there's a villain song of like, here, I'm the villain. Here is my philosophy of why I'm the villain. And you kind of learn through doing musicals, just generally, they tend to follow these structures of the songs themselves are just expressions of an emotion. They're not very plot heavy. So what you have to worry about in those kind of moments are just, what's the emotion of the scene that the character is feeling? Is it big enough to warrant a song? And from there, you do it. And in musical improv, in musicals, these songs are very complex. Think like Stephen Sondheim, really complex timing and different rhyme schemes, and everyone knows where their place is. But with musical improv, you build a shorthand of here are the conventions usually that the team's going to follow. So, for example, I just took another musical improv class in Denver, actually, at a theater, and I loved it. And different teams will have different approaches, but for building a scene with this theater, Rise Comedy, what we do is you'll have a basic scene structure of there is a main character and the main character wants something. That's the first song. The main character then loses it. That's the second song. The main character gets something back. That's your third song. And in the beginning, when you're trying to figure out like, what is this story going to be about, when say the suggestion is banana, someone says, do a musical about a banana. You then start to think of words in the beginning that are associated with that. For me, words that aren't necessarily A to B, but words that are more A to C. So like split, if you wanted to think of like potassium, or you wanted to make something about a sundae, and then you then go off and do a whole musical about meeting your friend on Sundays. And then that becomes the musical. It's very much you use that opening song where it's just kind of thematic exploring to say like, okay, I'm going to riff on this idea with everybody, but it looks to the audience like you're like, they already knew what they were going to sing about. Why are they're like already making up these words that kind of relate to each other, but not really. But really that's the time for the cast, the team to go, hey, everybody, what are we thinking about this concept? What do you think it means? Cool. Are we on the same page? Great. And then you go into your first scene with that common understanding to then set up your first song. So yeah, every team is different. What I love about this specific format of you have your opening song, which is theme exploration, and then the kind of basics of character wants something, character loses it, character gets it back, is it's very clear signposts for everyone else in the team. Because when you're making up songs with accompanist and your teammates, you need to have some form of structure. It's not just, oh yeah, they completely made this up on the spot. There is some practice that goes into structure. So like knowing,
well, okay, it would be completely chaos, right? If you don't have some kind of like agreed upon rules ahead of time.
Oh yeah. Cause like, how do you know that? Oh yeah. I'm going to do a song that's verse, verse, chorus, verse, verse, chorus, chorus. When somebody else has something like, oh yeah, I'm going to do like verse, verse, bridge, verse. And if you don't communicate that, like, hey, we're going to have this song structure at this time, these key understandings.
So do you, do you decide that ahead of time, or is it like, is there like hand gestures? Like, how do you?
Usually you talk about it ahead of time, but obviously, you know, if things fall apart and like, let's say the structure was like verse, verse, chorus, and somebody does three verses instead, you're like, screw it. I'm just going to get us back on track. It doesn't matter that much. And when you're really good and can be in sync with your teammates, and you can kind of feel when a song is going to end, or you can kind of feel like where it's going.
Yeah.
And there's also cues you can give to the companies to be like, I'm done. Hold out a note. Hold your hands out. And then they'll end the song for you.
Yeah.
There's definitely like tricks in there.
Okay. Okay, well, let's loop back to how this relates to game development for you. So what do you get out of this that you don't get out of game development?
That I don't get out of game. I don't get to sing in game development. I mean,
typically people don't.
No, I mean, I sometimes do when I'm going through different schedules with my team and I'm trying to pull up a document. I'll be like, I'm sorry, it's loading. And they're just like, why is my producer singing at me? Also, I feel like part of the unofficial job of a producer is just to be a bad stand-up comedian, just like on a daily basis too, to like get your team to be like, okay, we're here. But
yeah, I did see a post on Twitter about how like the producer's job is to fill the silence while somebody is trying to like set up their screen share.
Yeah. Of just like, yeah, so how about that sport game, y'all? Like, didn't those boys do great? Or just like, and then you get, what I love specifically being a producer is like, you get to just be like, hey, I'll be the dumb producer in the room. It's going to make a fool out of myself. Or like, I'll say something to like take the edge off the room. If people mm-hmm. are like stressed about something, I'll definitely just be like, well, explain it. I'll be the rubber duck, essentially.
Yeah.
And the singing rubber duck, actually. But what I don't get out of game development that I get through musical improv, it's definitely a space where I am encouraged more. I think as a producer, you have to plan stuff, but also there is some form of improv. This is the space where I get to creatively plan as opposed to more structurally plan with somebody else's creative ideas. So, you know, you have your directors and writers like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's how the game is going to flow. Producers can be creative in the sense of like, oh, maybe we can have these processes run parallel, or maybe we can find this way to optimize our process. But in improv, you are part of that much more creative discussion of, this is the idea that I have. I'm going to pursue it. I'm still kind of making it up, but it's a new way of interacting with that idea, being much more silly about it. Also, rhyming is not a thing that I can really do in my day-to-day work. It's definitely, I'd say, it's my tether back to my days of doing musical theater. I think it's really hard to have time in game development to like, or depending on your schedule, to be like, oh, I'm going to go audition for this musical in the city. And like, the rehearsal times are at this time and you have to be there and you have to memorize this. So I know people that do it and they love it, but I definitely am somebody who likes to have that balance. So I don't want my entire free time to just be dedicated to a musical. Whereas musical improv, it's a special thing I get to do ad hoc. There's not a lot of setup for it. It's super duper easy to get into. And it's simple and just
it's not is a nice giant time commitments for months at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. That makes a lot of sense. Well, let's flip that question over. How do you think it affects you as a game developer? Like, how does your love of improv and musical improv impact your creative output or process as a game developer?
It definitely, I'd say, keeps things a bit less serious than I think some folks will look at game dev sometimes. Like, I definitely think there is a mentality, if you're not careful, where everything is do or die. Oh my God, if this plan doesn't work like this, then we're screwed. Or, oh my God, if this thing doesn't come at this time, everything's terrible. And improv kind of reminds me to have the balance of structure and freedom, because that's what you also have to have in game dev too, is you have a plan for the plan to change. And if you're going to kind of sit there and be that kid on this and be that person on the imaginary boat that says, no, we're in a spaceship. What are you doing? Come back. Like, you're not moving the scene forward. You're not moving the game forward. It definitely helps me keep perspective if I'm worried about something at work, or it reminds me that I mean, all that we're here to do is to play. At the end of the day, we're here to create experiences for people that will make them feel joy, happiness, or joy, sadness, everything, especially with Life is Strange games, depression, make them feel something. And it's nice to have that structure of being a producer specifically to understand that good things come out of some understanding of structure, but you need to be flexible and adapt to whatever is going to come at you because you don't know what's going to come the next day or month.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you do, it is an industry that's very hard to plan. Like, I don't know any game that actually came out on time on a budget. Like, it's not a thing. Like, sometimes sequels, because like those are easier to plan if it's a straight sequel, but like anything new.
I'm really excited for the release of Psychonauts 2 in a couple of days. I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but for now, it's a couple of days. Tim Schafer did a behind the scenes little video and he had this quote that was like, you know, we've been working on this thing for like 8-6 years, but you know, a delayed game is always on time because you just keep moving the goalposts and then you're on time. I was like, I love that.
Yeah. I was trying to remember when I backed it. I backed it on Fig, which I don't know. Is Fig even still a thing? Like, I'm not even sure.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah. We're supposed to be, hello, fellow Fig contributor. We're supposed to be getting our emails, depending on the package you got, I think tonight. So, because I remember sitting in my, I think it was 2016 when I did a contribution. It was a while ago.
Sounds about right. Yeah, like it was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's when I was still in college, or I was graduating college in 2016. And I remember specifically sitting in my school library when I was supposed to be prepping for like an exam or something like that. And seeing, hey, Psychonauts 2, it's going to be on Fig. I was like, oh my God, I have no money in my account, but of course I'm going to order something and support this. Because I mean, playing Psychonauts.
Psychonauts is great, yeah.
Playing Psychonauts was the reason that I got into game dev. Because tying it back to improv, it really showed me that there is a place for comedy, for good characters. For expressing an idea that can be complex, like an abstract, like going into someone's brain and exploring their psyche, which I love. I do. Yeah. Which is incredible. And then keeping it light and still heartfelt, which is what you have to do in improv. You can't get too heady in like concept. You just have to be present with the people you're with, establish those good relationships, play off what you have, and seeing that in games and seeing that being celebrated, I was like, there's a place for me in this industry. And it felt really cool to see.
Well, I think it's about time to wrap up. So we're going to go to the last question, which is, what is something you'd like people to know about improv and musical improv?
It's not as scary as it sounds, I think, is the first thing. Because musical improv to improvisers, people that have been doing this for a long time, can be scary. Because you're thinking, oh no, I have to balance like rhyming and like song structures and like all of these things. But
you have to sing.
To sing, like all these things. It sounds a lot scarier than it is. But I think, as is with most things in life, you know, when you kind of understand the basic structure of something or you have trust in the people that you're with, those people are going to support you and help you look good on stage by setting you up for certain things. Or hopefully if you're with a good team, that's what a good team should do. And it's very similar to, you know, you and I are improvising right now. People improv every single day. Talking to somebody is improv.
I don't know. We're having a conversation. I'm not sure improv is the right term, but.
I mean, did we plan this? Did we plan this?
But most conversations are, I mean, by nature, theoretically improvisational, but.
Exactly. Because you and I have a shared understanding of, here's what a conversation is like. And for this podcast, sorry, I'm getting meta. the podcast of like, here are the questions that we're going to hit. And then you play in the space, you answer the questions, you figure it out along the way. Life is an improv. We're all making it up. It's really not that. When you learn the structure and you trust in that structure of, you know, the people around you, this is me on my grand philosophical soapbox now, I guess, about the meaning of life, which I didn't intend, but, it really, I mean, life is an improv. You're figuring stuff out. You take what you know and the structures you have in place and going, okay, I accept it. what am I going to do to build on it? And how am I going to make this better? So it's less scary than it sounds.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great note to finish on. So thank you very much and have a great day.
Yeah. Thank you, Masao. This was really fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun and extremely informative.
Thank you for listening. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. And thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. Bye.